Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I'm very excited. A man that has been very involved in a lot of things geopolitically and in the United States and our relationship with the rest of the world for a very long time is joining me today. And I'm very excited to welcome Dan Negrea to the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Honored to be on your show, Mel. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. You have such an amazing background. So I wanted you to share with people before we get into your book, because there's a lot to talk about and dig into. But I thought you could share with people your background before we head to the situation we are in right now.
Yeah, so I'm an American by choice. I was born in communist Romania. I defected. I came to the United States when I was 24 years old. I was working for the Ministry of Finance of Romania at that time. Went to Cornell, worked on Wall Street, and then decided to serve my country. I was a political appointee during the Trump administration, worked in policy planning, and I was the special representative for commercial and business affairs in the Economic Bureau.
Wow.
I'm now the senior director of the Friedman Prosperity Center at the Atlantic Council, and let me add a disclaimer. The Atlantic Council is a nonpartisan institution, and any statements that I make and the content of the book do not necessarily represent the positions of the Atlantic Council.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people have problems with the Atlantic Council. So on both sides, a lot of people like it. A lot of people, there was a lot of situations where people were being censored, and it appeared that it was coming out of the Atlantic Council. So like everything else going on, there are many different aspects to this. But the Atlantic Council has been around a long time and has seen a lot. So you actually have a new book out where you go into a lot of what is going on geopolitically. So I wanted to talk about A, why you wrote the book, and B, what was the impetus? What do you want the American people to understand about this very crazy time? Because we have our media is not telling people the truth. We have a lot going on geopolitically that affects everyone. And I wanted to see if you could shine some light on some of that.
Well, thank you again, Mel, for having me on the show to talk about this book. We think my co-author, Matt Kronick, and I, by the way, Matt is has an amazing background as well. He is a tenured professor at Georgetown University, has a doctorate, of course, and he is the senior director of the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security at the Atlantic Council. The title of the book is We Win, They Lose, which is a Reagan quote from the first Cold War, in which Reagan said, we are in a Cold War and we're going to win. We are not going to muddle through in a detente. We need to be the one who will end up with the upper hand. The subtitle of the book is A Republican Foreign Policy and the New Cold War. What we want to communicate with this book is that we are in a Cold War again.
Yeah.
Not because of choices that the United States has made, but because we have to respond to policies by China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, who are coordinating with each other and who are dictatorships, all of them revisionist and belligerent, aggressive. So we have to respond. So the message that we want to send with our book, one of the two key messages, is it's time for sober policies, for determined action, and for urgent action. So that's one statement. The other statement, the other premise of the book is that the answer to foreign policy challenges is a fusion between Trump policies and Reagan policies. What we call the Trump-Reagan fusion is the answer to our policies. Policy challenges, and a lot of people think that they were very different, but we argue in the book that they're actually more similar than they are different.
Yeah, well, they were dealing with different playing fields as well. A lot has changed, especially in terms of technology. The level of spycraft has changed dramatically. And again, there are globalist organizations that have grown much larger than they were back then at the time. Because one thing that I do want to ask you about is it appears around 2000 when the Project for New American Century and a lot of those people were setting up what they saw for the future, and they were expanding the military might, I guess, of the United States. It appears that the Chinese Communist Party decided to go a different direction and created the Belt and Road Initiative, which I argue is their military plan, or at least is part of it. And they now have 130 countries involved. And I look at this and I say, well, whoever's going to go in, I am obviously for Trump, needs to deal with the reality of that and how to counter that. Because it's unfortunate, because to me, when I look at the Belt and Road Initiative and I see Africa or places in the Middle East or South America or even the Caribbean, it's like we should have been doing that as well. But I know in some places it's failing. So what is the story with the Belt and Road Initiative? Because when I look at the world, I think that when it comes to China, that is their biggest strength. But I'm not sure.
So, Mel, first of all, you are so right that Trump was the one who changed our attitude towards China. During the Obama administration, the emphasis was on cooperating with China. Trump took a first step in his 2017 national security strategy in identifying China as a competitor rather than a cooperation partner, called the new era in which we were at that time,
right.
Strategic competition with the Chinese. Regarding specifically Belt and Road and what we can do about it, the Communist Chinese, like the Soviets, have a fundamental weakness, which is they are emphasizing the government's role in directing the economy and the government's role in directing international relations. The Soviet Union failed. The Communist Chinese are going to fail. Belt and Road is already slowing down and running into problems in many places, just like the Chinese economy is slowing down and running into problems. The United States' response to Belt and Road is to have agreements with countries such that the private sector of the United States should go into those countries, right, and not the U.S. government giving them grants that are stolen by the elites in those countries.
Right. That's what I've been saying for a while there, because the craziest part about that, which doesn't make all that much sense, and I do believe that's true, that Trump would be able to do this, is if we were developing through private companies, Africa, and we know that their population is going to grow, and I don't fully understand why we're not prioritizing that, because even if you want to export products and all of that, if we were the ones, our private companies, not our government, not USAID, even worse, if we were the ones going in and helping our different corporations, we're helping them have, you know, railroads, clean air, internet, all of that, then you also have an entire consumer base that helps what Trump, I believe MAGA was actually Trump's financial plan to regrow America financially and industry-wise. That would be so much smarter. And I think that you guys that were working in the Trump administration saw that. And then, of course, Biden comes in and it's like a complete turnaround. And any way that we would be like competing and going into these places where the Belt and Road is failing or is not providing what they promised or is shoddy, because it looks like there's some places that we could go in and fix the dams that aren't working or fix the. And that's what I'm hoping would come if we do actually go forward and we can some way figure out how to replace Trump back into the White House, that maybe that would be the plan.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There was a great book written by a woman by the name of Dambisa Moyo. She was a vice president at Goldman, and she was an economist, and she's now a member of the House of Lords of all places. She wrote a book in the early 2000s in which she showed that from the time of decolonization to the year 2000, developed countries gave Africa $1 trillion.
Right.
Trillion. The GDP per capita in the year 2000 was lower than it was at the time of decolonization. Aid is not the answer.
Right.
The answer is reforms in those countries where they empower the people in those countries and the private sector in those countries to make decisions and to grow. Freedom in those countries is the answer. And if they create an enabling environment in those countries, then American companies and companies from other free world countries can right. come there and do business in a fair way in those countries. That's the answer, not giving them more money from the American people.
Yeah, and it's that's also all over South America as well, because what is happening at our border, I had on somebody the other day, I was talking about this, and you know, that's also what's happened in a lot of the South American countries. We've given them a lot of money through USAID or, God forbid, the IMF and all of them. And the money goes to keeping people in power that never developed the countries. And, you know, all these years, I'm not a fan of the UN, but all these years I have been looking at the money that goes to these nations, especially from the IMF and the World Bank and all these programs that apparently, and they never develop. And I think that's part of the model never developing them is the plan. How can it not be at this point? So that gives a lot of opportunity going forward, because it does appear like the title of your book, that it is time that we shake it up to the place where we're winning, but also we're winning means that they're winning too. You know, and that's where we are. Go ahead.
No, you are so right about this. Many people say Reagan won the Cold War. He did, but more in the manner of he had a strategy to win. But in the end, the people who won the Cold War were the people in Poland right. who went on the barricades there, the people in Russia, the people in the Czech Republic, in Romania, and so on and so forth. They won the war. So what we need to do is to have policies that get away from taking money from the United States and give them money there. But we should stand for freedom, for free enterprise, free people, and free commerce. And we should tell them that this is what worked for us. This brought us to the level of freedom and prosperity that we have today. And they should borrow this and apply it to their countries. But that's the answer. I agree with you.
Yeah. And you know, wanting everyone to win, because this model that has been running at least since Rockefeller, you know, created or funded the UN forward has been very much about keeping all of these nations, it appears, enslaved to some extent to this model of like these IMF loans. And then when you look at USAID, I mean, I've looked at this monstrosity there. I don't know what they're doing in the rest of the world, but it's certainly billions of dollars that could be going towards helping foreign nations. Because what I thought you, when you were involved in the Trump administration, and I know Peter Navarro and other people talked about, was exporting, you know, our prosperity elsewhere. We're taking the MAGA movement and then helping people replicate it in every country to make all those countries great again. And then we can rebuild a global community that isn't globalism as we've been fed, but a new model. I think that's what you guys were hoping to do and should have had the 8 years to do so.
Well, I mean, a funny story, this guy Milei in Argentina said, actually, I don't need to change anything. It's make Argentina great again. He
exactly.
says, I don't even need to change the slogan.
Right.
And he said, yes, I'm emulating those policies, which are policies of radical change to empower the people and private enterprise rather than statism.
Yeah. And what have you seen? Because you said you came from Romania, you were 24, so you lived through communism and all of that. What is going on in America right now? Because I do look at a lot of foreign publications, and it's the first time I've ever really seen, in my lifetime at least, foreign nations wondering why the American people are allowing our country to be come some kind of apparent, you know, at least with the with what's happening with the lawfare, what's happening with the border, what's happening with many other things. People, especially people that have come here from communist countries, I've had on a bunch, are saying, why aren't the don't the American people understand where we're being led? And why aren't they doing it? Why aren't they speaking out? Why aren't they rising up? Are you seeing that the trend towards leading us to where the government, quite frankly, is the, you know, mother, father, apparently arbiter of truth, according to the Supreme Court justice the other day? It does appear that we're going farther and further away from liberty and freedom and all the things we stand for towards something that looks a lot like communist, or at least that's the movement it appears to be forcing us towards on the other side.
Well, it's an election year, and the people will have a chance to speak. And what is very interesting is that trends in both Europe and in the United States point to a rise of the voters on the right. So if you look in Europe also, we will have in June yes. elections for the European Parliament. And there have already been some elections. So this year, something like half of humanity is voting, an unprecedented large number, something like 70 countries and the European Parliament. Now, the European Parliament is a bellwether. The Parliament over there cannot pass budgets, cannot pass laws, cannot... but it chooses the head of the European Council, and it has influence with that and approves, doesn't debate budgets. So, but it's a bellwether, and everybody watches this very, very carefully. So all the polls indicate in the majority of the countries of Europe, and to some extent in all of countries, the rise of the parties of the right. And what is their message? Their message is twofold. And it is, to a large extent, also what we are seeing here. Immigration as one issue.
Right.
And then climate change. But climate change, the cost in Europe, if you ask people, do you think climate change is a huge issue? 90% say yes. But then they don't like the cost of the policies that the government is imposing on them.
Right.
So they agree that something is happening, but they don't, they almost, putting a little bit words in their mouth, they are saying the cure is worse than the disease. So you're putting so many restrictions, for example, on using fertilizers that you are destroying the small farms.
Right.
And you are increasing the type cost of gasoline. And then immigration, it's too much, is what people are saying. And there is a cost, and who is paying for this? And why do we need all those people? So it needs to start with what is in the interest of the citizens of that country.
Yeah.
So we want to all want to be generous, but what is the interest in the interest of the people? It has to start with that. And that's a problem in Europe. It's a problem here as well.
Yeah, and I think that there's also a supranational situation that is happening that is influencing a lot of people. And at this point, a lot of people worldwide are awake to this. It's a public-private partnership. They don't really hide it. We in America, BlackRock and Vanguard and all of these people are very involved with the World Economic Forum and the United Nations and the IPCC and the World Health Organization. And I think a lot of people at this point, not just in America, but around the world, are also wondering what those organizations and the amount of money that we pay to them to do all this stuff are really doing, because they seem to be driving, you know, if these climate policies were just in Europe or just in the EU or just, that's fine, but they're not. This is a worldwide movement. And then when you look at the money, I actually followed the money, not just in the IPCC and the climate stuff, but also in the World Health Organization. This is billions of dollars that are going into these globalist funds, where these people seem to, they're basically think tanks. The World Economic Forum obviously has relationships with lots of private companies that they call their stakeholders. But at the end of the day, that also, I think, robs national sovereignty and the whole idea of, you know, prioritizing your nation. And then when you go the next step further and you see they're having a big event about Agenda 2030, and the first thing it says is basically nation states no longer work, global problems need global solutions. Then you think, wait a minute, we got a problem in our country, but we obviously got a problem above our country.
So Mel, you are absolutely right. International organizations cannot impose edicts that are interfering with the sovereign power of the people of the different countries.
Right.
The people of the United States did not cede their sovereignty to the United Nations or any other international organization. The other issue that you are touching on climate change, that the Chinese Communist Party, yeah, the dictators, the dictatorial force in China, is the greatest offender in the issues in which we are supposed to cooperate with them through international organizations. So, for example,
right,
they say, so if you listen to the Biden administration, they say, we are so interlinked with the Chinese, we have to cooperate with them on climate change and health. Okay, so let's look at climate change. CO2 emissions in the United States have been decreasing for something like 10 or 15 years, the same in Europe, but they are increasing in China. And they are even telling us that they are going to increase in China.
It's crazy.
And they say in 2030, we will start going down. And in the book, my co-author Matt Cronick and I say, our wives will not be impressed if we told them we will start to do more in house chores in 2030.
Right. Exactly.
We will really become very helpful 6 years from now. So that's number one. On health issues, they say we should cooperate on that. Well, okay, so we cooperate. How about we start by investigating the origins of COVID?
Right.
Last I've heard, the Chinese imposed economic sanctions on Australia for proposing exactly that. They tried to coerce them economically. We do not have a cooperation partner, and we do not have a competitor in China. What we have is an adversary. It's a different notion. It's a different reality that requires different policy. And that's something that is important to understand in the United States and our allies also.
Yeah, well, let me ask you about that, because another thing that I've found, since my big thing is I like to follow the money, is that a lot of what is happening in our college campuses, and quite frankly, our K-12 schools now, and a lot of these movements that seem to be, you know, that are not obviously organic movements, you can trace that money to the Chinese Communist Party if you want to. And to me, this is something that I would think every parent, every grandparent, everyone in America would have a problem with, and yet it continues. And the people in D.C., I don't know what is going on, and it does appear that the three branches of government have been usurped somehow by what I call, you know, the parent company of America, but something is going on and it's affecting now a couple generations of our kids. And I believe that that is being largely funded by both the CCP and these organizations, because people don't realize UNESCO is actually at the very top is a CCP person. So like, what can we do about that?
Yeah, so two things. One thing that you just touched on at the end, UNESCO and other international organizations. The United States cannot abandon the international organizations to the Chinese. We should not do that. We should not allow those international organizations to dictate policy to the United States.
Right.
That's unacceptable. But we should also not throw out the baby with the bathwater, say that they are totally useless and we don't care about them. So we need to, the United States government, at the State Department, there is an office there for international organization. We need to fight tooth and nails to make sure that the people who are appointed in leadership positions at international organizations are from free world countries. Good people need to be there. Sometimes there are ridiculous situations like the
human rights.
Human rights. The chairman was from Iran and the vice chairman was from Cuba. And for women issue, we had someone from Saudi Arabia. And you say, God, guys, come on, let's be serious. What are we doing here? So, you know, there needs to be, you know, it needs to pass the laughing test. So that's number one. But at the same time, it is also important to recognize that the Chinese act not only through international organizations abroad, but also in the United States through the Confucius Institutes, right, for example, that are in all the universities, where they have people who are agents of the secret services of China. This is not me imagining. It's been proven. And in China, they have laws that every citizen is obligated under the law to collaborate with the secret agencies to the enforcement oppression apparatus in the People's Republic. And there are people here in the United States to inform on Chinese students, right, if they speak up in classes in the United States, so their parents at home and relatives at home suffer. So that's unacceptable and has to stop. They even found police stations, Chinese manned police station in the United States, trying to coerce people in the Chinese diaspora. So you are so right, Mel. This has to stop, and let's hope that it will.
Okay, and let's, because you were, you've been involved for so long and you do correlate Trump with Reagan, and I think Trump would really like that. You hear him talk about peace through strength a lot and what he would do. And we are going into a very, the people that have, I believe, captured our country, they do not, it looks like by any means necessary, what they are doing to Trump, especially in New York, wanting him to pay almost $500 million in bond just to get an appeal, and all the other stuff. How does what they are doing with lawfare, this Department of Justice, it's really coming through them and the people above them, honestly, through Brookings and other, they're not hiding that they're all involved. This goes back to Crossfire Hurricane. It's the same group of lawfare people. How does this affect how the rest of the world looks at America, the persecution of Donald Trump that is obviously about politics and frankly about the 2024 election?
We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now.
Well, I would say that there are two kinds of observers overseas. There are people who benefit from the status quo of the Obama and Biden administrations. And those people don't like Donald Trump and are willing to believe the worst about him. We are not going to change their mind. Right. And they have an agenda. They benefited from a time when America was carrying an unfair burden in the world. And these people, to quote President Trump, took advantage of America. So those people believe what they believe. But other people are looking at what is happening here and are considering the current situation reminiscent of what happens in banana republics or in dictatorship, where the party in power is using its resources and its capacity to persecute the leader of the opposition. So, you know, remindful of how things are done in Brazil or in Turkey or in places like this, yeah, where you make the opposition ineligible through yeah, some sort of legal maneuver. So this is how the world looks at it, depending on the point, the vantage point that they have.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's sad for America because we're losing a lot of our ground that we were able to use with the rest of the world when it came to actually helping countries that were banana republics and were having a lot of problems. Now the rest of the world is saying, who are you to look at what you're doing there? I mean, I feel like the Biden regime is giving a lot of actual dictators around the world, you know, the ability to say, no, you're not coming to help our people. You have no standing here. And that's a real shame. And I think that's a big problem, a long-term problem we'll deal with. I wanted to also just touch quickly on NATO and Russia. The issue with NATO is that a lot of people that I follow, at least, they say that NATO is no longer a defensive force, that NATO, that there was agreements between Reagan and Gorbachev and other people to actually wind down NATO. And instead, it went the opposite direction. And now we're in a place where NATO continues to grow and build. And then I see a lot of, you don't know if it's real anymore or not, but then you see a lot of these leaders around the world saying, oh no, Trump's going to end NATO. He's going to pull out of NATO. When last I heard, Trump wanted the other nations in NATO to pay their part. So what is the going forward? How do you view NATO? Because there are a lot of people that truly, I believe, do not think that it's a force for protecting the rest of Europe, but really actually, again, another situation where it has a lot to do with international globalism and finance, even more than just what they're saying.
So this is a great question. So one of the great things that President Trump did was to really bring a lot of clarity on how we should think about pretty much everything to do with politics, which is to start with the question of, is it in the interest of the United, of the people of the of the American people or not? If it is in the interest of the American people, that's good. If it's not, we need to change it. It's not complicated. We need to put America first because other countries put their countries first. It's not really new and it should be obvious, but it hasn't been. And it still isn't with everybody. So then let's look at NATO. NATO was created by the United States after the Second World War, has been tremendously helpful to the United States in defeating what Reagan called the evil empire. It helped mobilize the countries of Western Europe and Canada to stand up to the Soviets and stop them. It worked superbly, and we won without fighting a war, which is fabulous. It doesn't get any better.
Right.
The question is NATO still useful to the United States? And the answer is yes, if the other countries carry their fair burden in making NATO strong. If the other NATO member countries look to the United States to defend them and they don't carry their weight, then they are not in the interest, then NATO is not in the interest of the United States people. So President Trump gave an interview recently with Nigel Farage. And Nigel said, would you defend countries that are members of NATO according to Article 5? And President Trump said, yes, if they pay their 2% that they said that they're going to pay. In our book, We Win, They Lose, we have this analogy. If you sign up for a gym, if you don't pay your gym membership, you cannot go to the gym. You cannot go and exercise. So we said national security should be more important than the Zumba class.
Yes. Okay?
So they don't pay. They are really not living up to commitments that they have. And they don't deserve the support of the organization. That's what President Trump is telling them. Not that we want out, but we want to make NATO strong if everybody pays.
Yeah. And I think there's another side of that, too. What if we were hit on our homeland? Are they coming here to support us? Because I don't know if that would happen. I don't know if Poland and Turkey and all these other countries would show up here. God forbid something happened here. And that's also something that I've never seen anyone ask, which is, well, what's their commitment when we're in trouble, if we're in trouble? Because, you know, that we have the submarines from Russia and China. It's not impossible to think that something could happen here. And at that point, you know, is that commitment going to be reciprocal? And I've never seen anyone ask that. And I think it's worth thinking about, because people in America seem to think that nothing can happen here, even though it has already. And we, you know, have the wide open border and all this stuff. But again, what is the commitment on the flip side? It shouldn't be with any of these international organizations, including NATO, that America is the main, you know, funder, provider, fighter. Our lives, our money, our futures are all invested in the rest of the world. And what happens when something happens to America? Then we have to really wonder, well, what is the benefit, like you said, to us in that situation? And will that pan out? And like you said, if they're not paying for it as it is, how much are they going to do for us anyway? Is France going to send people here? I mean, you know, now the last thing I want to say is sometimes I play this, when I do speeches, I play a Ronald Reagan speech called A Time to Choose. It was actually when Goldwater was running, and he went and he made a speech about, you know, where he felt we were in the country coming up to the election. And I just wanted, before you go, since you do, you've been doing this for decades and really have a unique vantage point, having worked inside the Trump administration and elsewhere, and the Atlantic Council, which is a place of, that you will have really in-depth talks, and it's a think tank that goes on many different levels, many different topics. So A Time to Choose right now for you, what are we choosing in 2024?
Excellent question, Mel. By the way, love you, love the way you framed this. Congratulations. Oh. Very nice. The time to choose right now is, are we in a Cold War or not? If we are in a Cold War, if between China, Communist China, Communist North Korea, totalitarian, dictatorial Russia, and fanatical mullah-led Iran, this is the new axis of evil. If these countries that are all adversaries of the United States and of the free world, if indeed they are determined to threaten our vital interests, are we prepared to act in such a way that we protect the freedom, the prosperity of the United States, the kind of life that the American people want to live? So this is the moment that we are in. To recognize that we have serious adversaries and to act in a way that protects the interests of the people.
So when people go come November, what in their heads and hearts should they be focusing on to continue down the path of a more perfect union as promised? Because I see two totally different ideologies. And in fact, what you're talking about is the most important thing, because escalating to a nuclear World War III is actually the worst thing that could possibly happen for everyone on planet Earth, not just these governments that are deciding. And so to me, it's two different ideologies. And in fact, I do believe, I was watching the hearings about the disaster pullout of Afghanistan, how the sanctions backfired on Russia recently, a different talk about that, what's going on in Ukraine, what's going on in the world. It does appear that the Blinken, Sullivan, Nuland, all of that, it does appear that they've burnt a lot of bridges that we would actually need going forward to avoid an escalation to the next level. So to me, that's the most important thing. But because you can talk about any other topic you want. To me, avoiding that, But I feel like, and why I say to everyone, if you don't want this to escalate on the next level, we need somebody who can actually talk to these people. And I still feel like Xi and Putin and Modi and Kim Jong-un, I still feel like these people would sit down with Donald Trump and whoever he brings to the table. But I don't feel confident about the other guys.
Yeah, so thank you for helping me out, because the answer they gave you before was incomplete in the sense that I said, okay, this is the problem. So then what you are asking me now, okay, so what's the solution, right, Negrea? That's why I brought you here on the show.
I wasn't letting you go without a solution.
Yeah, we are not here to admire the problem. What's the solution? So again, we call our book, We Win, They Lose, Republican Foreign Policy in the New Cold War. So what is the Republican policy to win the Cold War? What is it? Well, first of all good strategies start with a goal, and the goal is to win. We have to win this Cold War. Exactly how? Well, we need to go back to what we call this Trump-Reagan fusion, and it has to start with peace through strength. We need to have a military that is so strong that nobody even thinks about challenging us economically. The next thing is, in the 2017 National Security Strategy under President Trump, we introduced the concept of economic security is national security. So we need to work on moving from the ideal of free trade to fair trade, number one. Number two, having an energy policy that is a strategic benefit, a strategic asset to the United States. And finally, very importantly, American exceptionalism. We need to believe that America is a force for good, that it's a country that we can ask our young men and women in uniform to die defending. If we describe America as a country that is sexist, homophobic, racist, oppressing other peoples, then why would we ask our young people to serve this country and to risk their lives for it? So we need to put these three things together, and let's not forget the American exceptionalism.
Yeah, well, I recommend your book highly. We Win, They Lose. And it doesn't mean that they lose and we win. It means we win and then we export that elsewhere. That's what we have to do. So I highly recommend your book. Everyone can find it, the link below. And any last words for the people? I think people are a little demoralized. I think we have a cognitive psychological warfare being played against us on the highest levels, in my opinion, through the media, through the social media, through all these different things. And I think people are feeling a little bit demoralized. I sometimes talk about the Bezmenov interview where he talks about the demoralization. And so you don't seem that demoralized. So I wanted you to kind of end on what you think the American people should see going forward, so that they continue to understand that we, the people, are the answer.
Well, Milton Friedman had a series of shows called Free to Choose. And he went to the border between the People's Republic of China, controlled by the Chinese Communist Party, and Hong Kong. And he said, guys, it's very simple. Do you see people from Hong Kong clamoring to go into communist China, or you see them trying to flee communist China into free Hong Kong? What is happening on the southern border is a scandal. It's an outrage. It's absurd. It weakens the United States the way the world is seeing us. If we cannot defend our border, how can we defend anything? Okay. At the same time, it is the greatest testament that America remains the greatest country on the face of the earth, because millions of people risk their lives going through jungles, through desert, crossing rivers with children, with old people to come to America.
Right.
They are not going to Russia. They are not going to China. They are not going to Iran. They come to America. So it's still the greatest country that there is. Let's vote in November.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. It was so great to have you. And I will have you back, hopefully, because as things evolve, it's good to have somebody that has a perspective of your level that can see the big picture from the inside, both economically and geopolitically. So I'm very grateful you were here. The links to your book are below. Everyone go out and get his book and find the strategy and then learn it and share it and make sure that people understand the stakes and how we win. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate it.
Congratulations on your show, Mel.
Thank you.
Great job. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Bye-bye. It's that time of year again. People are getting sick. They're getting the flu. They're getting the cold. They're getting all different kinds of things. And I have always been very grateful for my friendship with Dr. Zelenko, Dr. Z. And though he's not with us anymore and I miss him every day, he has left behind the best remedy to me for anything that ails you. And that is Z-Stack from Dr. Zelenko. There's Z-Flu, Z-Stack, and Z-Kids. There's also many other products there. It's all about naturally boosting your immune health and fighting anything that comes your way. Dr. Zelenko was ahead of his time. He is out there fighting for us still to this day, and he's left behind the best gift. The gift is your health. So go to MelKDrZ.com, or you can go to my partner's page at themelkshow.com, click Dr. Z or Z-Stack. Better health for us all awaits. Thank you, Dr. Zelenko. Did you know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today. ¶¶